He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And I'd like to start off to this week's show with the discussion about tires, mainly surrounding tire compounds, because we are transferring from warm, hot summer weather, going through the fall where the weather starts to cool but is not yet cold, and then we have wet roads and dry roads and the like. And one of my vehicles I've been driving over the last several days prior to this show has been my 84 Mazda RX-7. And it is it's a wonderful car. Those who are old enough to listen and are listening to this show will remember that car as being an early performance vehicle, very small in stature compared to the current crop of sports cars, two-door sports cars, including the Miata, which is not a whole lot, maybe bigger in one sense than the first generation Mazda RX-7s, but it is still heavier because of added safety equipment, frame construction, and all that. But it's still a two-door, very sporty vehicle to drive, and one of the best you can buy in 2021 or 2022 coming. But back to tires. My Mazda happens to have a set of four off-brand, no-brand-name tires on it, which I suspect have been on it. I can't remember when they were first put on it, but they may be 10 years old. The first thing about that is a safety situation, which people should not, which people should know about their tires if they have tires that are probably 5 years old or older. Jay may want to chime in on the age situation eventually, but I'm sure these tires on the Mazda are quite old. I've been driving it over the last 2 days fairly steadily, and I've had it in weather that has been sunny with warm highway temperatures because of the sun. And as late as this morning, as we were taping the show or before taping the show, driving it in a wettish weather condition around our northwest corner and actually on the highway, which had me going 75 to 80 miles an hour at one point. I was very conscious of the possibility that the tires on this vehicle are really too old to go at those speeds. But more than old age, the rubber may have dried out on the treads and the compound, so that I'm not sure that I was really connected to the not drenchingly wet road surface, but certainly damp to wet road surface as I was driving it around in this weather. Being such a light car, there is not a lot of weight on either end of the car. The Mazda RX-7s were, I think, known for about 50-50 balance because the engine in the front was very lightweight and it was set well back in the engine bay. But needless to say, I noticed on the wet surfaces this morning when I was stopped at a stop sign and taking off, I virtually had to almost feather the throttle to avoid losing traction in the rear end. It's a rear-wheel drive car, for those who don't know about rear-wheel drive cars, and there may be some amongst us that have had nothing but front-wheel drive. But in any event, I lost traction very easily in first gear and second gear, and I played with it a little bit to see what was going to happen if I lost traction. But just all I could think of as I was accelerating was what would have happened had I had to brake strongly from a 70-plus mile-an-hour speed if I had to make an emergency slowdown situation, which had me thinking about the compound of the tires. And since I can't give you a brand, all I know is that they are really much of a no-name brand, but the rubber might have dried out enough so that would affect how much traction adhesion these tires might have versus the newer, more modern tires, which you can buy from a number of dealers, and you can get tires with compounds. It'll be excellent in wet weather, excellent in dry weather, excellent in both kinds of weather, and then you go to warm versus cold. If I will transfer this from my Mazda RX-7 experience to talking about the Jeep Wrangler,
hold on,
which
hold
has
on,
had...
Hold on. Can I barge in on tires?
Yes, you can. Okay, so I think I know that Mazda well. It's a fantastic car. It is indeed very light. Tires in those days were much narrower and smaller in diameter than they are today, which in wet weather should actually be, you know, just fine. But to your point, yes, older tires, not only do they risk drying, the tire compound might dry up, but maybe more importantly, you go through heat and cold cycles. And, you know, if that car sat for very cold winters and then very warm summers and very cold winters without hardly ever being driven, those tires will indeed harden and get very, very hard. And, yes, you will lose, especially on greasy roads, I'd say.
Greasy is a good word term. That's what it felt like in this morning's roads.
No doubt about that. So, yeah, old tires are never a good thing. Going at 75, 80 miles an hour in the wet with a almost 40-year-old car just fresh out of the garage may not be the wisest thing to do, but, it's a great car.
Okay, well, sticking to the tires, I was going to stick with the tires on the Wrangler topic, which I think you weren't aware of. A friend of mine has recently purchased a Wrangler Rubicon, and it came with Rubicon-associated options, which include the tires. And this person has commented that he had this vehicle in Nantucket for all summer, and he has brought it from Nantucket to his home in Salisbury. And he said it wasn't very good. He said he loves the Rubicon and slow around-the-town driving and off-road driving, but he wasn't very happy with it on the highway. Now, I have recently read a comparo between the new Bronco with similar tires, the similarly outfitted vehicle, and the Rubicon. And one of the comments that this article said is that the Bronco with the independent front suspension was a joy to drive on the highway, as opposed to the Rubicon not being a joy to drive on the highway. So there were two negatives on this and one for the positive. And I told this person that I had driven a Rubicon version of the pickup truck as a test drive, and I found that it wandered all over the road when I took it back to the dealer, and he asked me how I liked it. And I didn't mean wander all over the road, but it definitely did not want to track in a straight line.
So let me march in here again about these off-road tires. They look great. They make your vehicle look like it can climb a mountain and maybe can, but they are absolutely horrendous on the road.
Yeah, a lot less traction. What I wanted to talk about, and you can continue my conversation because that's where you're going.
Yeah, and so a lot more less traction, more noise, and certainly
they squirm, they hunt. Hunting is the word I would use. They hunt along with their tread compounds or designs, and they pick up on road imperfections. Would you agree? And that'll tend to aggravate or enlarge the steering misbehavior, if you will, and erratic behavior, and cause these vehicles not to be fun to drive on the road. And the comment of this owner of the Rubicon says he's waiting to try this Rubicon out in the wintertime to see if the tires that are so good in sand and off-road are going to be the compound. He mentioned the compound.
Actually, not necessarily. We think that the bigger treads will be better, you know, in the snow. Sand and rock climbing tires are not necessarily, and probably not by a fair margin, not the best tires in the snow.
Right.
The best tires in the snow don't necessarily have the deepest grooves. They also have, you know, the rubber compound is different.
It's harder, I think.
Yes. No, actually, softer. You know,
For the summer use you're talking about and rock climbing?
No, winter use.
A winter use, yes.
Yeah.
You want a softer compound in winter, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
You want a softer compound tire in the winter, let's get to the point of that part of it, than you do necessarily in the summertime, because winter is going to make the soft compounds also harder, but they'll still remain soft and pliable and be give you good traction assistance in snowy conditions. Okay, I think we can finish with that, unless you've got a final comment on that.
The final comment is there are differences.
Yes.
The grippier the tire, usually the more fuel you will burn.
Right.
And just as an example, Tesla is probably the only, I was going to say the only honest manufacturer out there. That seems a little out of line. But they will claim different fuel mileage or fuel range, which basically equates to fuel mileage. There is a difference in fuel range with the same cars equipped with either the original tires or the one-size-up tires. So what does that tell you? Those bigger, larger diameter and larger width tires are just offer more resistance, and you're just burning more fuel, or whether it's electric or gas, you're just burning more fuel.
That is true. The larger tires don't necessarily give you better gas mileage. And
no, they give you worse.
The manufacturers, when they make their stickers for their windows, test their cars or have their cars tested for fuel mileage ratings with tires that they have chosen to best suit the vehicles, and therefore hopefully included in that is giving their vehicles the highest possible city mixed and highway driving MPGs for the most part. And they contract with tire companies to provide those as the standard equipment on the assembly line. And then when we go to change tires, and let's say we have been getting something equivalent to the stickered mileage, as I seem to do with my cars, I have noticed, yes, when I've changed tires, the miles per gallon ratings have gone, in most cases, down a little bit below what the standard equipment was. You can go the other way, too, probably. But tires are very important. They may or may not be important in one's mind about fuel mileage, but they have all these characteristic differences, which we've talked about today on this show. And some people may want to take that to heart when they go and replace the tires on their vehicles. Some places give you a 30-day tryout to try your tires, and if you don't like the ride or you don't like the noise or whatever, you can bring them back. That may be something some people want to take advantage of if they're sensitive to noise and or, you know, the hum of the tire or the way it rides. Because tires, I mentioned on several shows back that I have purchased a set of Michelin tires, which are supposed to give me 90,000 miles of traction life. And I have made a couple of comments on earlier shows that I feel that these tires are harder, that means harsher, give a harsher ride slightly than the tires I had when I purchased the vehicle. They seem to thump a little bit more over bumps. They seem to not have as much compliance going into little potholes. I attribute it to the rubber compound, which is designed to give me long traction as opposed to maybe a more softer or compliant ride. Enough?
I think
so. Let's go to Rivian. You want to talk about Rivian? I agree with you.
Yeah, we didn't get to it last week. You know, we talk a lot about electric vehicles coming on the market, and Rivian is, I think, about to make a splash. They've made a splash in the press in the last few weeks. I think the pickup truck they're coming out with is coming into production
December.
Yeah, right about now. It's going to be available to customers before the end of the year. Size-wise, it is smaller than an F-150. I think it's between what are now considered small trucks and
how about the midsize? Bigger than a midsize, smaller than a full size.
Correct.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is all of the articles I've read say pretty much the same thing. The truck has incredible performance. We're talking, you know, 0 to 60s in less than 4 seconds.
Who cares?
Has very decent range. I think we're talking about 300-mile range, 320.
Unloaded?
Well, of course unloaded, but so is any other vehicle that's evaluated.
And I don't harp on that, except right now, because of the lack of numerical lack of charging stations available out off the main roads.
Anyway,
versus fossil fuel. But keep going, because the Rivian is a great truck.
So it rides extremely well on roads, and it puts to shame all the rock crawling vehicles, such as the Jeep Wrangler and the Ford Broncos, in off-terrain driving, because it's also the first vehicle to come on the market with four electric motors. Usually, you know, you have a front or rear wheel drive vehicle with a motor in on either the rear wheels or on the front wheels. And in this case, they have four motors, so each wheel has its own motor, has its own its own power.
Power supply, yeah.
And so there's no drive shafts. There's very little in the way of rocks on the underbody, for one, and the power can be applied very smoothly and very precisely to any wheel that actually needs it or needs to slow down. And it's made rock climbing or crawling apparently really easy, even in the normal drive mode. So, and then what I think is most interesting is Rivian is coming with the pickup truck is coming out first, but within the next few months, I think in the spring, we'll have a SUV variant of that vehicle, and I think that is going to be a killer. Just going to be a fantastic vehicle.
I agree.
That's my prediction.
Also, it's great looking. I like it because it's
absolutely
unique looking,
yeah,
and doesn't look like anything else on the market. So that alone makes me think of it as being a very successful vehicle to be, given the performance capabilities of it that you have told us about.
All right.
So we hope it goes without a hitch on launch. I think they had some kind of special four-wheel turning capability on the, at least on the pickup, which may be delayed. Are you aware of that particular situation, Jay?
I'm not. But
caused
I'm
like
sure
almost rotational steering capability without a whole lot of diameter in the circle turn.
And
four-wheel
and again,
steering,
I think
in effect.
My hunch is the company is going to do well because they're going to be able to scale their operations from the get-go. Again, this is the same company that has an order for 100,000 vans for Amazon. They
right.
are scaling their production facility to
well, I hope they'll be able to be produce both levels of vehicles so that they won't just be producing vans ahead of the consumer's desire to pick up a Rivian, because I think
right.
they're going to have a lot of orders for the Rivian SUV as well as the pickup truck, given the positive publicity that you have noted on this show and people who are reading and following it have been seeing as well. Can we go to something else?
Well, you got 6 minutes, so...
Okay. Let's. I'm continuing with my Motor Trend magazine because they had a lot of vehicles. I like what they're doing. They're having very short vehicles. They call them intakes on certain vehicles, and then they give you the Q code for which anybody who wants to read about these vehicles more in depth can flash their iPhones on the Q code, and apparently it opens up a whole lot more about the vehicle that they've done a one-page review on. One of the ones they've done a one-page review on is the 2022 Porsche 911 GT3, which they rave about. And I don't follow Porsche enough to know why it's a lot better than the others, but those who want to read about that particular vehicle can buy the magazine or go online and see about it. Then they've got the similar to the intake on the 2022 Cadillac CT5V Blackwing. The Jay has brought up the Blackwing versions of the Cadillacs in a couple of shows before, and their subheadline is Bombastic Fantastic, whatever the heck that means. In any event, it's meant to be a superior performance version of any Cadillac before it. Then they have an intake on the 2022 Mercedes EQS, and they go to great lengths to tell you it is not to be compared with the Tesla S or Plaid. It is superior to a Tesla in many ways. And then they have the 222 Ford Maverick, all of which have Q codes to enlarge the scope of their one-page reviews. And they think this Ford Maverick is going to be a winner for Ford. They compare it a little bit to the Hyundai Santa Cruz,
in size. But these are 2022 cars that people may want to pay attention to. But then they go to the Bronco versus the Jeep, and they end that. This is a multi-page face-off, and they end it with a review which says the Bronco is perfectly capable of taking on the Wrangler, but right now it's getting a few hiccups in its launch, as Jay has noted, from the roof down to the quality control of the interior fit and finish.
Performance-wise, I think
it's pretty much equal to the Wrangler.
Let me barge in on this off-terrain, off-road, all-terrain vehicles. That's
right.
Whether it's the Wrangler, the Bronco, or anybody else getting into that niche. I think it's kind of ridiculous. It's fine having a bunch of hardcore rock crawling addicts go with their old Jeeps and go in Moab Desert and rock climb. But now we're getting people who are taking their brand new Bronco Sports, who think they have a rock climbing vehicle, and all of a sudden they're at 5,000 feet somewhere in the Rockies, and the thing rolls off a cliff and ends up 100 feet or 200 feet below. And there have been pretty bad crashes of late of people wannabe rock climbers in their everyday vehicle.
In their new rock climbing capable vehicles, or their defenders for that matter.
Or the defenders, and I just don't think it's all that smart. And
I don't think it's smart either. I think that they promote these vehicles to do all these things that a lot of people have no clue about how to drive in these conditions. Ford, Jeep has had places where you could go and take your Jeep and other than the Rubicon Trail type of situation, and have guided performance drivers help you learn how to do it. And Ford has got four tracks around the U.S., or four areas, I should say, because I don't know their tracks, places which the new Bronco owners can go, I think gratis at the moment in some cases, and learn how to drive their vehicles. Not that they should then go off and find the latest cliff hanger road or something up in the woods somewhere in Maine, Canada, or out west, and try it on their own without going through such a test. Because you're right, these vehicles will tip over. All vehicles will tip over, but when you take them on some of the terrain that Jay is referring to, the terrain is not particularly friendly to anybody who is new to owning one of these vehicles can do amazing things in the right hands.
And that should be our safety tip of the day.
And that should be our safety tip, actually, for the year. Just because...
Well, you should always drive the vehicle you have well within the limits of what the vehicle could theoretically do.
And more to the point, you should be aware of what that is instead of
correct.
Just...
Well,
going...
and that is probably the biggest problem is that I don't know how many people, when they drive a new vehicle off the lot, know what the capabilities are unless they're true road driving enthusiasts. And I don't think the general public thinks about that kind of thing when they're buying the run-of-the-mill vehicle that they're trying to grab off a lot that's on a big sale and that kind of thing.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.